Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America's jazz history is great and filled with great names and great music. A new documentary reminds us that story is not over. This hour on Point, we're listening in on the new frontiers, the new icons of jazz. You can join the conversation. What, who does jazz mean to you? Miles, Monk, Dizzy, or somebody new? And if it's too new, too different, is it still jazz? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Behind me, Nicholas Payton right there with Fleur de Lis. Joining me now from New Orleans, speaking of Fleur de Lis, is John Comerford, president of Paradigm Studios and executive producer of the big new four-part documentary on jazz called Icons Among Us. Jazz in the present tense. It's currently airing on the Documentary Channel Mondays at 9 p.m. with the music and voices of a whole new pantheon of jazz. John Comerford, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on today.
You are ambitious, sir. 7 years of taping and filming and really bringing in a whole new generation, more than a generation, of music here. What did you set out to do?
Well, I think when it all began, it was really a very powerful idea that crept in, which is a response to the idea that jazz is primarily an art form that deals with spontaneity and improvisation. So, you know, therefore, in kind of a direct way, it requires a response, you know, in the present moment. And we really felt, in response to, you know, another historical treatment, which will not be mentioned, that we really need to focus in on the living generation of jazz musicians and see what they were up to and help to expand their audiences and elevate their voices.
Well, maybe it will be mentioned, but let me just sit with you for a minute here with some music, just to get your sense, your take on what was and what is. When you look back on America's great jazz history, Charlie Parker and so many, but let's just listen to a little Charlie Parker. Here he is, legendary jazz saxophonist, 1946, Ornithology, inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 1989. Listen with us, John. Charlie Parker, Ornithology, 1946. There are so many ways that you can say, yes, that is American jazz. There's so many sounds that say it, but there's as good as any. John, does that still, to your mind then, with your focus on improvisation and being in the moment, being not, does that still stand for jazz? Is that so powerful that it's made contemporary jazz a prisoner?
Well, I'm really glad that you brought up Charlie Parker, Tom, because a lot of the time when I'm relating, you know, the power of jazz music to somebody who doesn't necessarily have a lot of experience with it, you know, I talk about this moment of discovery. And with Charlie Parker, there was an actual moment that occurred in his musical continuum where he crossed a musical bridge in New York City at Minton's, I believe. And in that moment, jazz and music, you know, also changed forever. And that discovery by the audience and the excitement associated with that change in music and that split second when the thought occurred to him and he translated it into a phrase and the genius of that is essentially in some way, shape, or form being replicated every time a jazz player hits the stage and discovers, you know, something new. And that happens every night because it's all about improvisation.
Well, and so he's doing improv there, but he's also creating a sound with its own power to inspire, but also maybe to contain. Let's get something much more contemporary in our ear right here, and this is from your documentary. Here we've got Skerrick, contemporary saxophonist Skerrick, with his song Psycho Circus from independent 2006 album Left for Dead in Seattle. Skerrick, 2006, Psycho Circus. Definitely a different sound. We can hear, I would say you can still hear Charlie Parker and a whole lot of other greats back in there somewhere, but this is a new take. Does it mean jazz is free? Do Americans think jazz is free? Do Americans listen to this and say, yeah, that's my jazz too?
Well, I think it's really, you know, from our perspective as filmmakers, we're really interested in listening very deeply and very closely to what, you know, the musicians are saying and certainly what they're playing. And if they're really inside of what, you know, you might call the zeitgeist, the spirit of the time, then they're reflecting the time that they're in, whether it's, you know, the machinations of modern society through, you know, an exploration of a rhythm like what we just heard, or if it's, you know, adapting sort of a new effect or layering to tone and that type of expression. It's really a reflection of what surrounds them. And if they're channeling that well, then at least from my perspective as a filmmaker, they're really, you know, they're onto something.
You know, I didn't know this artist, but I think I could warm up to that. I think I could. And it does have the moment in it. You talk with so many great musicians in this documentary. And they go to a point I saw in an LA Times blog commenting after having seen your documentary. It said, jazz may be alive and well, but it's acquired a troubling addiction to its past. And you go to trumpeter Nicholas Payton, and he says you have to let go of everything you've seen and heard to experience the truth, what he's looking for in jazz. And he describes here in one passage from the film, from the documentary, he talks about how the sound of jazz itself, in a way, became what? A kind of a cliche or too confining.
I think the problem is once jazz became a thing, it seemed to take on a persona that became less and less of what it actually was. You know, when you listen to, like, Louis Armstrong and the Hot Fives, there's so many different types of grooves and rhythms. There's no thing like, oh, it's swing, it has to be in 4/4, and the drummer has to be going jangling, jangling, and the bass has to be going doom, doom, doom. You know, after a while, it became like that sound is what jazz is. And it became a very narrow view of what this music used to be.
Nicholas Payton, New Orleans trumpeter there from the new documentary, Icons Among Us, Jazz in the Present Tense. John, did you feel that, those walls closing in, the way Nicholas described them, the kind of what, a reduction of what was, sometimes confining what is?
You know, that's a, you know, really potent statement by Nicholas that he made about, you know, that feeling of being in the shadow of something else and the idea of how to step out of that into the light of your own time and really create your own voice and develop that over time. I think that, you know, any artist is very interested in doing that. But in jazz, it's even more doubly difficult because you have such an enormous range of possibilities to explore, you know, night after night, day after day, record after record, as your own voice develops. And when we were in the process of interviewing Wynton Marsalis at Jazz at Lincoln Center, it's funny that I never really felt a conflict at all between the work we did there in that, you know, incredible venue and repository of knowledge and of practice in relationship to anything that I would do, you know, here at Jazz Fest late night at 3 a.m. in a sweaty bar, you know, standing on top of a bar and filming, you know, a small group of people just in the ecstatic moment of the groove and, you know, jazz funk. They're connected, at least for me. And that's I think that's part of the beauty of it. The vessel of jazz can encompass so many things.
But you know very well that others have seen Wynton Marsalis and the so-called Young Lions, a kind of jazz revivalists, as what, too buckled up with the past, a kind of a block to the new. We'll come back and hear what Wynton Marsalis had to say to you. It's really interesting, and a lot more artists we'll hear from this new documentary. How many did you tape, and how many did you talk with in total, John?
I think we talked to about maybe 120 to 130 artists, and we filmed in Super 16 millimeter about 30 hours of performance. So we've really built an archive.
And how often did you hear them saying, the past is haunting us, or audiences don't want the new thing we have to give? Is that a problem that they are? I mean, we heard some from Nicholas there, but how common that theme?
Well, it's really, you know, a powerful hurdle and a real challenge for an artist, a jazz artist in particular, to deal with that subject. But I think that if there was an overall feeling that we were getting from musicians, it was you really need to get your jazz knowledge. You need to understand and know the past. And through that study and that practice, you will be able to achieve a certain sort of baseline understanding of what has come before. And that gives you a strong foundation to pursue your own voice.
John Comerford is executive producer of the new four-part documentary on the documentary channel Icons Among Us, Jazz in the Present Tense. You can join the conversation. Do you listen to today's jazz, or are you all about the classics? Do you want jazz evolution? We'll go out with Terrence Blanchard from the album Flow. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new frontiers of jazz. After Charlie Parker and Monk and Miles, after Wynton Marsalis and the Young Lions, we're looking at the sounds of jazz right now. Behind us, the Robert Glasper Trio from the album Mood, 2003. With me from New Orleans is John Comerford. He's executive producer of the big new four-part documentary on jazz now. It's called Icons Among Us, Jazz in the Present Tense. You can go to our website, onpointradio.org, to see video clips from Icons Among Us. We're also joined from New Orleans by Alan Evans. He's drummer with the jazz funk group Soul Live. March 2009 was their 10-year anniversary. Put them in a new generation. They've recorded with Chaka Khan, Dave Matthews, Talib Kweli, John Scofield, opened for acts like the Rolling Stone, Dave Matthews, Roots, John Mayer. Their most recent album, released in April 2009, is up here. Alan Evans in New Orleans, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me and us. Big fan of the show.
Oh, well, it's great to have you with us. Just terrific. You've no doubt seen a bunch of the documentary, and you're out there with John Comerford now. What do you make? I mean, you've been at it for 10 years with Soul Live. Do you feel shadowed, burdened by the past, or inspired by it? Free?
We've always felt inspired by the past, of course, you know, and I don't think that we've ever felt hindered by it, though. You get to a point as a musician where you have to really focus on what you're doing, and not, it's a fine line of not caring what people think and trying to somewhat please people because they're, you know, coming to pay to see you or buy your albums or whatever. But we've never considered ourselves jazz musicians. Huh. So we just consider ourselves musicians, and I think that's the overall vibe of a lot of our friends and contemporaries. You know, it's just a style. It's just one facet of what we do or what we've learned.
That is fascinating. But, let us listen to a little bit so our listeners can decide for themselves if they want to put that label on you or not. And then I want to talk about the label and why you would pick it up or not. Alan Evans of Soul Live is with us, along with John Comerford from New Orleans. And here's a little bit from Soul Live's 2000 album. This is Backwards Jack from their album Up Here. Let's hear it. Wow, that is terrific. Just wonderful. I love it. John Comerford, but is it jazz?
Well, I was thinking about a moment from our filming with a great drummer named Jeff Ballard when we were talking about labels. And Jeff said that when he walks into a record store, he would love his music to be filed under B for Ballard. So when you go in, you look for Jeff Ballard music, because that's what he plays.
But what does that mean exactly? I mean, okay, at one level, yes, jazz should be now. On the other hand, it's got all these powerful associations in the past. If an artist like Allen Evans doesn't even care if you call his music jazz or not, does that then leave jazz defined as the past? You talked earlier about documentaries that will not be mentioned, but of course Ken Burns did his big documentary a few years back on jazz, very focused on the past. if the musicians, by and large, I mean, he'd say the same, but by and large, if musicians like Allen himself aren't necessarily wrapping that name around what they're doing, does it mean that jazz becomes an artifact of the 20th century?
Well, you know, in my opinion, we should definitely bring Allen in on this, you know, because it's Soul Live is, you know, his expression and art form along with his fellow musicians.
And but we're grooving on it.
Yeah, the way that I feel about it is essentially, you know, there are so many different sort of elements to polarize or to gravitate to with respect to traditions. There's not just one sort of pole. There are different poles. And Allen, as an artist, wants to, you know, discover and explore different fringe elements associated with, you know, what might or might not be jazz, or he wants to, more importantly, play with boundaries, not necessarily push boundaries, but play with boundaries. That, to me, is incredibly vital and incredibly interesting, and I'd love to hear, Allen, you know, how do you feel about that?
So, yeah, is it funk or jazz? I mean, people are going to call it something, Allen.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, we draw from so many different styles, you know, our band, you know, in particular, funk, reggae, jazz, rock, soul, R&B. I mean, a lot of it has to really do with how I was brought up. I mean, I started playing drums when I was about 9 months old. So, and there was music in the house all the time. So, some of my first, you know, memories of music were like Miles Kind of Blue. But then also, like, in the same record pile, there was Miles at the Fillmore, you know, or, like, you know, Miles on the Corner, or Herbie Hancock, you know, you have Headhunters, or there was Joe Cocker, Mad Dogs and the Englishmen. So it was, you know, it was all the same, you know. And that's the thing. I remember, you know, hanging out one time in Colorado. And we were hanging with, you know, some other, you know, musicians, so-called jazz musicians, like Nick Payton or whatever. And man, you know, we can talk about Willie Nelson, Black Sabbath, you know, Van Halen, all, you know, and it's all the same to us, you know. I don't know.
It's wonderful, and the music will move me, but I wonder if it leaves jazz, the name, the title, sort of back there like a butterfly, you know, pinned to the board. Let's listen to what Wynton Marsalis has to say in the documentary, Icons Among Us. Of course, a huge name, but, you know, some saw him in the sort of Young Lions as fixated on pre-fusion, straight ahead, swinging rhythm section, you know, and all the rest. Here from the documentary is Wynton Marsalis. He's been awarded 9 Grammys, won the Pulitzer Prize for Music, the first for a jazz recording. You're going to have to explain exactly what he's saying to me here, John, but let's listen and try and get it.
Marcus Roberts used to say it's like the relationship of food to dessert. A person who likes food don't mind dessert. But boy, a person who just want to eat dessert, they don't want to hear about food. That food becomes offensive. So I feel that in jazz, it's interesting in America that we're one of the only people in the world who created an art form, then tried to figure out how to make it not have a definition. Most people create art form, then they kill themselves. This is what Homer meant, and this is Homer, and this is what Homer, and this is what Dante was talking about. This is what Beethoven's art. They're trying to get deeper into what that art is. We try, however, to get as far away from the art as possible.
Wynton Marsalis on jazz. But John, is he celebrating that fact of getting as far away from a definition as possible? He says, we're the only people in the world who create an art form and then try to figure out how to have it not have a definition. Is he happy about that or unhappy?
Well, I think he's speaking as in many ways jazz does to an inherent complexity associated with the art form, at its base level. I suppose it's looking at this incredible, heritage and canon of music that has come before in the form of recordings and in some cases of memory. And how does one deal with that situation, take the best from it, focus in on, its power, and then at the same time advance, and continue to have an appetite for the unknown? The contradiction of that reality and how to do that, I think, is also, in a way, it's a reflection of our American consciousness in the sense that we have this, real deep drive for constant reinvention, but yet we have this enormous heritage behind us, whether it's the Constitution, colonial realities, or economic realities. That is part of who we are, that complexity. And I think, Wynton spotted that here, and he's bringing that to the surface for the discussion, which is, a really powerful part of what this art form is about, is the agreements and the disagreements associated with it. That gives it the life and vigor, that resonates.
We're all making it up every day. John Comerford and Alan Evans of Soul Live join us from New Orleans. Let's get some callers in here. So many on the line from Salt Lake City, Utah. Dan. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love the show.
Thank you.
You came to our inaugural night here in Salt Lake City back in November.
Oh, yeah.
And
loved it.
Talked to our crowd.
Yeah.
And my sons opened for you, the John Henry Sextet. I don't know if you remember them. They were playing jazz down at the...
Oh, yeah, they were fantastic. They were terrific. I unforgettable. That was your son? And what did he play?
Well, one son plays trumpet and one son plays trombone.
Well, my compliments, sir. You've got some talented offspring. How do they... Do they talk about this? Do you hear this at the kitchen table?
As soon as your show this morning announced jazz, I alerted them. I called them at both of their houses and said, get the radio on. If they're listening now, I'm liable to get my butt chewed because they don't like me talking about them. However, my younger son was just named the top collegiate jazz trumpet player in America by Downbeat magazine. So he's moving right along.
But
my older son, they're both in graduate school here at the University of Utah getting their master's in jazz studies. And I just want to say that it was Miles Davis and Charles Mingus that paid for my son's college education. We've never put a cent in.
Now, what do you mean?
We've never paid a penny.
What do you mean by that? Because he tracked them
so
well?
That's what they wanted to do from the time they were in fourth grade. We gave them violins when they were four and five and started taking them to symphonies wherever we lived. And I'm a tramp electrician, so we live a number of places. And we'd always buy tickets to the symphony, get the youth package, and take our kids to the shows. When my older son was in about third grade, he started asking about Miles. We'd be playing that at home, and he commented he loved the symphonies and all, but why weren't we going to hear this music?
Dan, we got it, but let me ask you this then. He tried, and maybe it sounds like he has, channeled Miles and maybe Mingus. Is he now a prisoner of those greats, or is he sort of, get that track down and on you go?
My younger son was a composition major. He got his bachelor's composing. And his major influence, I'd say, probably was Charles Mingus, although Maria Schneider and, there's a lot of good, Charlie Hayden. I mean, there's a lot of good jazz out there that they grew up listening to.
Dan, give us the name of their combo again. Give us the name of the combo.
The John Henry Sextet.
John Henry Sextet. I remember it, and you bring it all back. Appreciate your call. Thanks very much, and good luck to your young offspring there, Dan. Let's hear a little bit more from the documentary. I mean, right on these points. Here's guitarist Bill Frisell, one of the country's leading jazz guitarists since the 80s, best known for using a big array of effects, and he's talking about what the music means to him.
Music is a place I can go where things work right. I mean, where people are together and it's like, I mean, I like to think of it as a reflection of what life could be somehow. You know, it's just where there's infinite possibilities and there's no one gets hurt or anything. It's like you can just do anything.
That sounds like a definition of jazz. It sounds pretty great. But then, John, you have in the same documentary, writer and Seattle Times jazz critic Paul DeBarros. And he's saying, well, fine, but what about the references here? We understood the references in the 20th century. Do Bill Frisell's wonderful and creative individual, do we know what he's up to with it? Let's listen to Paul DeBarros.
If you look back at what we now consider a golden age in the music in the 50s and 60s, you think of more than music. You think of integration, the civil rights movement. You think of a kind of bohemian outsiderism. The problem jazz faces right now is that if you say jazz to somebody, they don't have something obvious in the present culture they can connect it with. What is it actually saying? If you ask Lee Morgan and Sonny Rollins what their music was saying, they would say, well, you know, I'm a black person in a white society where I have something to say and I need it to be heard. That was part of the message behind that music. That was part of the urgency of it. We understand that, and we understand the relationship between Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, and Ornette Coleman with black freedom. We do not understand what the relationship is between Bill Frisell and the society.
Paul DeBarros from the Seattle Times, jazz critic at the Times, in John Comerford's Icons Among Us. Wow, Alan Evans, this is deep. This is deep. What do you say about that? I mean, the music is wonderful. We hear exactly what Bill is saying, Frisell. This is me. This is right. What I love to play. But then Paul says, well, what's the reference here? How does it matter? Does it matter to you?
Well, it definitely matters. I mean, the thing is, you know, my father and, excuse me, his brothers, a lot of my family lived, you know, obviously lived through those times, mm-hmm. being African-American, you know, males. And females, obviously, my family mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that was then. But now the thing is there's always challenges. You know, like there's always, you know, every time I go on stage, I mean, we're on tour right now.
Yeah.
And we haven't been on tour in over 2 years. So what I was really looking forward to seeing is what the world is, how it's changed, you know, in the past 2 years, in the past 6 months, mm-hmm. with the financial crisis, mm-hmm. and now we have the swine flu, you mm-hmm. know, whatever. You know, there's always things that are going on in the world that are going to affect, you know, our music, you know, at the moment that we're playing it, you know, and how people are reacting, how people feel when they come into the show, how they're feeling during the show, you know, and for us, it's, you know, about making people, it's not escapism, but it's about making people feel good, you know, and that was, I think, always the goal in jazz or rock or whatever. I mean, you know, for the most part, you know.
To feel good, but also to feel what is right now, what is swirling
exactly.
around them today.
Exactly. Exactly.
John, does that make it jazz? Big John in New Orleans?
Does it make it jazz?
Yeah. To sort of have the pulse now?
It's certainly, you know, it was really interesting that you played that clip from Bill because I was at that performance, which is the music bed for that, and that was the Bill Frisell Trio with Sam Yaheel and Brian Blade.
Save the story for us, John. We have to take a short break here. We want to hear it as soon as we come back, if you'd be so kind.
Yeah, I'd love to pick it up.
John Comerford is with us in New Orleans, along with Alan Evans of Soul Live. We'll go out with Greg Osby, principal here from the album Nine Levels, 2008. You can join us, 800-423-8255. What do you want from jazz? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about new frontiers in jazz, looking at the sounds of jazz right now with John Comerford, executive producer of the new four-part jazz documentary called Icons Among Us, Jazz in the Present Tense, 7 years in the making, and interviews with all kinds of jazz musicians who are out there doing it right now. Behind us, Esperanza from I Know You, album Esperanza in 2008. This is right up to date. You can hear history breathing in it. At the same time, John Comerford joins us today from New Orleans. Also with us from New Orleans, Alan Evans, drummer with the great jazz funk group Soul Live. March was their 10-year anniversary. The most recent album, just out in April, is Up Here. You can join the conversation. Do you want jazz evolution? Or did the greats get it just right for you forever? Where do you hear jazz going now, and do you like it? And does jazz have to be new to be tuned into the now to be jazz? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. John Comerford, this is a very different sound from Bill Frisell, but you had a Bill Frisell story going for us there.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to take you into the filmmaking process a little bit.
Sure.
When we were shooting at Jazz Alley in Seattle, the Bill Frisell trio, Samuel Hale and Brian Bladen, Bill Frisell. And I'll sort of go out of the sort of intellectual discussion we're having and tell you a little bit how I felt in that moment.
Great.
About that performance, and in particular a song, which is actually the music bed for the Paul DeBarros comment and ultimately for Bill's comment in the film.
Mm-hmm.
The song that was being performed there was Bob Dylan's Masters of War. And in the audience that night, there had just been some very serious reports that day about activity in Iraq and about losses.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill had chosen that song to reflect that moment in time and his feelings as an artist and as a human being. And the emotion and energy and communication of that night and that song in that context was one of the most powerful, you know, jazz experiences I've had, you know, yet in my life.
Mm.
And it's really a testament to, you know, the co-directors, to Michael Rivora, Lars Larson, Pete Vogt, and in particular our editor, Christian Hill, that they could essentially present that on the back end of Paul DeBarros' comment about, you know, how we don't know what to relate to, what is the handle, you know, when... Mm. Actually, right there, you actually do have a handle that's coming in and that's referencing the past, but doing it in a way that's completely modern and updated. And ultimately, because it's, you know, an interpretation and a powerful one at that, is very contemporary. So that was an amazing experience.
It is a beautiful piece of filmmaking, but of course the musicianship drives it, and you've got your that beautiful 16-millimeter camera all over it. Alan Evans, there in New Orleans, we've got a comment here from Twitter. Here's Matt, who says, you know, in jazz, connoisseurship has always gotten in the way. And I wonder about that, Alan. If you get people coming up and say, you guys, this is great funk, I love it. What do you mean jazz? This isn't jazz.
Hey, you know, that's cool. Can't please everyone.
It doesn't sound like it's going to make you lose much sleep.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, like I said before, like, you know, we're musicians, and the people who are digging on us, and, you know, the funny thing is for us, originally when we started, we had in mind that we were gonna just play our music. We're gonna start our own way of distributing our albums, and it was kind of funny. Our first album that we designed, or that I designed, you know, in Photoshop, I kind of made it look like a Blue Note album or whatever, just because I don't know, I thought it was kind of funny or cool or whatever, or ironic. And a year later, we get signed to Blue Note, and then. But the funny thing is, we never considered ourselves jazz musicians. So we kind of got some flack from the connoisseurs, you know, the Blue Note connoisseurs, you know, especially when we'd travel over in Europe. We'd go over and you know, touring around and seeing us live is probably closer to seeing, like, you know, Sly Stone or like Led Zeppelin yeah. than it is, you know, Jimmy Smith, you know. Yeah, so yeah. we definitely cleared, oh, I wouldn't say cleared a few, we definitely cleared some seats from rooms. You know?
A couple of connoisseurs on their way, maybe.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? I mean, the thing is, you know, I'm not really too worried about, because I'm 35, you know, and a lot of us are in this age or this range, or at least in the young mentality, you know.
Sure.
I mean, the connoisseurs aren't going to be around too much longer. So.
you will have your way and day. Let's go to Lorraine in Boston. Lorraine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I really enjoy your program.
Oh, thank you.
I want to give a nod out to Ella Fitzgerald, Mel Torme, jazz vocalists and musicians, forever ambassadors to the music. And I also want to show some appreciation for a young composer and upcoming pianist, Claude Diallo. He has shown verve, vigor, and enthusiasm and respect for the past masters. And the music will continue and thrive as long as we have dedicated, respectful young musicians.
Lorraine, let me ask you then, what about jazz musicians today who don't necessarily hitch their wagon to the past masters? Are you equally warm to them?
I believe that they're hitching their wagon whether or not they realize it. I believe that the musical references are there, whether they're subconscious or not, but they are definitely present. And a lot of the young jazz musicians who are in the know, they are more than willing to at least tip their hat to the great professionals who have gone on before.
Ella and Mel and you tip to the new Claude Diallo. That's great. Lorraine, thanks for calling. Let's hear from a newish pianist, Matthew Shipp, from Icons Among Us, the documentary, active in the jazz scene since the 90s. Talks up here in the documentary about the nature of jazz itself as ever-changing.
Well, jazz is a living organism, and, you know, I mean, we're organisms. We are. Our cells change every 7 years or so. We have a completely new different set of cells, all of us in our body. And if jazz is to be a living organism, you can't seek the living among the dead. I mean, it's, you know, it's the cycles in nature, and the music is bound to change into an organism that we might not even recognize. But you can't say that that's not jazz. Jazz is just a word. It's a four-letter word. It has actually no meaning.
There's a beautiful organic view of the forum. Barry in Newport News, Virginia. You're on the air, Barry.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing today?
Very well. What do you hear?
A great program. Jazz, to me, has so many different spawns from the original days. It's like, but nowadays you see so much of the ambient music, live DJs, whether it be the jam band scene, any of that. It's all been spawned by what jazz is and what it was in the past. And I think everyone just kind of borrows from it and finds their own a new style. It's constantly, styles are being invented from what jazz is.
Yeah, borrowing, some picked up, some carried on, some rejected. Here from the documentaries, thank you, Barry. Here's trumpeter Russell Gunn talking about the generation of jazz musicians that came before him, and he's not adopting all of it.
The generation right ahead of me, they want that whole neo-50s suit and tie, you know, talking like, you know, you were, you know, educated at Harvard and all of that mess, you know. And I'm not down with that.
Russell Gunn wants it his own way, and why not? James in Andover, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I love the show. Secondly, I used to play with the Evans Brothers in the early 90s in New York and up and down the East Coast. I was in a band that played with a number of the different bands they were in, including Moon Boot Lover, and I've always enjoyed his music a lot.
With our guest Alan Evans, no less. Great.
Yeah. And the thing that I love about jazz is that it's always been about breaking down barriers, whether they're cultural barriers, racial barriers, spiritual barriers. and most importantly, musical barriers. And what I want out of jazz and what I want out of music and life in general is just the continual and to continue all of the experimentation and moving forward in progression. And what I would hate to see is to see things just stop. And whether it's Jelly Roll Morton all the way up to sort of free jazz with Alvin Ayler, just keep it moving. Just keep it going and keep experimenting and keep on pushing the boundaries.
And where did you play with Alan so he can recall, James? Give us a couple of nights.
So many little holes in the wall, but Axis on Houston, maybe yeah. Nightingale's Bar on the corner of 13th and 2nd Avenue, Wetlands, up in New Hampshire at different places, even up in Vermont at parties and barns and things like that.
At barn parties, is it coming back to you, Alan?
Oh, yeah, no doubt, for the most part.
yeah, right. That's pretty great. James, thank you very much. Let's listen to a little bit here of pianist Robert Glasper. He said, look, the greats wouldn't have wanted us to be right there. He's recorded with everybody from Carly Simon to Mos Def, saying here in the documentary, today's jazz music shouldn't sound like that from days gone by.
Well, if Charlie Parker got out of his grave today, he wouldn't want playing the same he was playing when he was alive. He'll look around and be like, what the are you doing? You're supposed to go. What are you doing? I played that already. Why are you playing this? I've been dead for 100 years. You know what I'm saying? I'm back now, and you're still playing my Move on. You still sound the same? You know, that's a smack in the face to people if you keep the same way. You're supposed to continue on a legacy.
With all the beeps, the message comes right through. And hearing the same thing, bassist Reed Anderson plays with the jazz band The Bad Plus. We hear them at the very top of the hour. He says a jazz musician must move past the great legends of the past.
I think there is this feeling out there that's put out there in the world of jazz, like, well, before you do your own thing, you got to deal with this. You got to deal with, and you do, of course. You have to deal with the history, and you have to know what you're talking about when it comes to jazz, capital J. But, man, I can't spend my entire life trying to get to the point where Charles Mingus was and, like, emulating him, and before I move on, that's completely absurd.
That's pretty great. Let's go to Rott in Watertown, Massachusetts. Rott, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. I'm Rott. I teach piano at Piano Mill in Andover, Massachusetts.
Great.
And my question is about the people who play jazz. I think what defines jazz is also the people, the musicians
sure.
who play jazz. For mm-hmm. example, if I have a Tibetan monk playing, using a certain scales to play certain music, I wonder whether that would be called jazz as opposed to another situation where I have a group of Berklee music students playing jazz, using the same scale, playing similar kind of music with similar kind of rhythm. Would that be called jazz?
It's a great question. John, how about it? You're somewhere high in the Himalayas and you've got Tibetan musicians. I don't know, maybe they're throat singing, or they're using their own scale. They're just doing what they're doing and riffing. Is that jazz?
Well, I mean, it's certainly improvisational to a degree. I mean, I think that, yeah, I heard an amazing quote from Robert Fripp, the guitarist, about the nature of improvisational music, which really captured, I think, the essence of what that is, and that's such an important component to what jazz is. But jazz is also a tradition. But in terms of improvisation, he said, essentially, it is the assumption of innocence in the context of experience. The assumption of innocence in the context of experience. So improvisation is a really powerful thing, that childlike ability to, or innocent ability, to be in the moment and simultaneously have this, you know, incredible, you know, discipline and experience behind you that you can weigh into. And that is such a, you know, powerful moment that I think all of the, you know, musicians who are interested in improvisation and spontaneity really, really gravitate to.
It's a great phrase.
I think I really think also that, you know, from the perspective of how this film has come together and all the voices that, you know, we've encountered and all the support that we've gotten, you know, from other people who have similar value systems associated with what jazz is, you know, be it discovery, authenticity, you know, quality, those things that people are interested in that have, you know, real potency and relative and relevance, rather, you know, to their lives today. Our underwriters, Don Q Rum and also Rums of Puerto Rico, have been amazing at supporting us and allowing us to discover, no pun intended, you know, what we're trying to achieve as filmmakers and the stories that we have. So there are very powerful, you know, allies that share these sets of values. And back to your caller who just, you know, brought up Tibetan music. Mm. I mean, I just love the fact that somebody could bring up Tibetan music in a show about jazz and have us use that as a segue for a discussion. I think that type of, you know, eclecticism is just so vital. It's great.
Maybe you'll have a barn party on the slopes of the Himalaya next, Alan Evans. Get a little soul live out there in Dharamsala with the Dalai
Lama. We could do a live remote on point. It'd be great.
Yeah, we'd do it for sure.
We are every producer I've got is nodding yes. They're ready to get on that magic carpet. That is pretty terrific. Alan Evans, it must be good to have the spotlight on your generation, Mr. 35 years old and deep in the funk and the jazz, huh? Fun to see
it
icons
is.
Among us on you.
Hey, we're just going to keep doing what we do, you know, and that's what it's about. It's about life, you know. It's about keeping it moving.
We hear
that's
it.
That's all it is.
We hear it in every beat. Alan Evans with the jazz funk group Soul Live joining us today from New Orleans. Thank you very much for being with us. Keep on drumming.
Thank you.
John Comerford, executive producer of the new documentary Icons Among Us, Jazz in the Present Tense. It's quite a piece of work. Compliments to you, John. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. It's really been great to have a discussion with you and your listeners.
We will go out with End of the World Party, Modesky, Martin, and Wood. 2004. That's pretty much now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is Jazz. This is On Point.